Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now you can listen to The Game anywhere in the world. Just go to radio.com and stream us anytime
using the internet.
Stay connected to Atlanta sports 24/7 only at radio.com and the radio.com app. Streaming live now. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover with John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Get it on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you here on an early Tuesday morning as we head into the final hour of the program. Amy Lawrence will be coming up next. 404-741-0929 is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. We ask you to download the radio.com app because, well, we know you're not in your vehicle as much as what you used to be, but you want to listen to the station in this particular show. How do I do it? Simple. Download the radio.com app. Put that on your device today. Take that smartphone, those Alexa speakers, that tablet. You've got your CD player. You've got your Walkman. You've got your Laserdisc, your Coleco, your Lightbright, your Palm Pilot. I don't know what your device is. Just download it onto something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media is all at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow us on all the different platforms there. As always, the best way to be a part of the show, it's through my personal Twitter page. Reach me at JMCH316, at JMCH316. That, of course, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. This is your nightly look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the Falcons Flyover. We'll hear from Raheem Morris, the head coach, here in just a couple of minutes. So, A.J. Terrell continues to have a good rookie season. He's PFF grade for the year is now up to 71.3, and that puts him as the 20th rated quarterback, cornerback, I should say, not quarterback. I don't think he plays quarterback. It's not Taysom Hill, right? 20th rated cornerback in the NFL. He's been the best rookie corner in the league thus far. So give him credit. I mean, listen, that's so far so good. Now, I'm not going to sit here and write the story, you know, like I'm on Get Woke or something, that he's headed to the Hall of Fame or he's going to be a bust or what have you. But, you know, so far so good in what he's done. Now, I'm going to say it like this too, okay? It ain't hard to be the best corner on this team. That ain't saying a whole lot. 71.3 is not bad, but that's nothing to write home about. This team isn't exactly loaded with good corners right now. I don't think Kendall Sheffield is as good a corner as some people think. I know 26 is no good. Darquez Dennard is really hit or miss right now. Does some good things, does some not so good things. So being the best corner on this team when you're still the 31st rated pass defense in the NFL is, you know, problematic. Now, to be fair, part of why they're the 31st rated pass defense in the NFL is because they can't sack the quarterback enough, because they don't get the quarterback on the ground enough. When you had to start yesterday, Alan Bailey and Steven Means and Charles Harris has to play snaps. Now, that's a problem. You're going to have a hard time doing a whole lot in the NFL when that's your two starting defensive ends are Alan Bailey and Steven Means. Not a knock on those guys, but that's not what you signed up for. That's not Tack and Fowler that you signed up for. Two first-round draft picks, one of them being a free agent with a lot of money attached to him. So, but good for A.J. Terrell. Listen, this is what you draft a guy at that spot for. You knew you were going to have to throw him into the mix. You knew that it was going to be some trial by fire, and he's getting better. He's going to have his hiccups. You know, he's going to have his moments where things don't go so well. But, you know, at least when you're looking for bright spots about this defense and, people to point out about the good of it, Grady's been certainly a bright spot this year. Debo's had his moments. A.J. Terrell definitely been a bright spot as well. All right, let's hear from the head coach, Raheem Morris, after the victory here. Here's Coach talking about how he wouldn't say that they were one-dimensional, but the Saints dictated terms.
It's hard to say one-dimensional when the Saints did a good job of dictating the terms. Like I talked about yesterday, we didn't do a good enough job in the second half of running the ball versus too high to make those guys one-dimensional. So what they did to us was they really got after us and then got up with the two-score lead and made us one-dimensional. So I wouldn't say it was anything that I looked at us and said we were too one-dimensional. When the game kind of got away from us in the second half, becoming a two-score game, that's what happens to you. You become one-dimensional. We had to rely on the pass and allow them to stay in two-man and really man us up and go man underneath some of our really good wideouts and make Matt hold onto the ball to cause some of those, you know, unnecessary sacks or things that usually don't occur when you plan and dictate terms like you like to on offense.
The game didn't become a two-score game. Trying to see here when the final what the time was on the final there was 12:41 left in the fourth quarter when it became a two-score game. So it's not like the Falcons were playing two scores behind the whole game. They were up 6-3, then they were up 9-3. They were down 10-9 at the half. They were down 17-9 after three quarters. And it was 24-9 at the 12:41 mark of the fourth quarter. So it's not like you played the whole game, Coach. I mean, there's so many wrong things about this statement from Raheem Morris. Number one is, it's not like that you played down by two scores the whole game. In fact, you had the lead for a while in the game until the half. Then this whole dictating thing. Why is it we never dictate to anybody? I hear Raheem Morris. I hear Dirk Cutter. It's always everybody dictates to us, but we can't dictate to them. I don't understand that. Do defenses dictate to the Kansas City Chiefs? Seriously, do defenses dictate to the Chiefs or to the Steelers or to the Saints? Did we dictate to the Saints yesterday or Sunday? Just every time I hear that, they were dictating to us. Well, why don't we dictate to them? When I've got Gurley, Ridley, Julio, Matt, Hayden, why aren't we dictating? Here's what we're going to do, and you're going to have to figure out how to stop us. Oh, no, we just got to take whatever they get it. How does Hayden Hurst have no catches on two targets yesterday? It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's so many wrong things with what he said in that clip. They didn't run the football at all during the game. They only had 15 carries the whole game? It's not like they were in when they still was a 1 point, 3 point, 8 point game, that they were still running the football, then had to give it up at the end. It's just ridiculous. Here's Coach Morris talking about sacks and quarterback hits were also about scheme versus execution.
There's always going to be calls you want back from a play caller standpoint. And, Dirk is probably one of the most honest and upfront coaches I've ever been with and worked with, as far as being able to tell you that he'll want a play to or call back. And last night there were a couple of those that definitely factored into it. You never can point the finger at all players. You always have to look at yourself as a coach. And we constantly talk about here as developing a collective development. And the players, that's being a fundamental skill development team that can go out there and play. And then from a coach, this is about being clear, concise, and being able to get your message across, or whatever your points want to be as far as getting the ball down the field. And that's part of our collective development. And when you get the collective development, you have a chance to develop a winning culture. And we got the making of development of winning culture, and yesterday we were not able to live up to the standard.
Does any of that make sense, what he said? I'm asking a legitimate question. Does any of that – I'm listening to that clip. That's the biggest bunch of garbledy gook I've ever heard in my entire life. Hell, I'd rather have Dan back and just hear my – and just hear the Bears loose, do right longer. What winning culture? There's none. That's the whole problem. There's nothing about this franchise from the owner down to the ticket salesman that tells you that there's anything about a winning culture with this organization. That's why everybody's gotten fired. And Raheem hasn't changed that. Because you beat three teams that were 12-19? That's a winning culture? It's not. This is a team that went to the Super Bowl in 2016. That's four seasons ago. That's not Steve Barkowski era. It's one graduating class of high school ago that they were in the Super Bowl with a chance to win it. And they've done nothing to build off of it or even get close to replicating it. There's nothing about this that tells you their culture's ready to – they have the personnel, but there's nobody in the organization that's ready to turn this thing into a winner, including the guys that are coaching right now. Here's Raheem Morris on who was responsible for Matt's 8 sacks.
A couple of them were Matt's fault, which we talked about and addressed today, and Matt is so accountable that he'll tell you himself and how accountable he is at all times. When it comes to those type of things and some of the sacks that he had to take, necessarily didn't have to do. Some of them, you know, a couple of them, maybe three of them were on the O-line as far as protection, as far as getting beat, either in a one-on-one matchup or just getting overset and on a slide or something like that. And then the other ones, you know, obviously we gotta win some of the coverage one-on-ones down the field. So it's a combination of all the things. It goes back to what I talked about early in the week. When you play division opponents and they know you really well, you got to have better execution than those guys, and we did not last night. And that is a fact that was a big factor into the game on why we didn't have the outcome that we would like to have.
And the other thing he didn't mention is coaching. You couldn't scheme your way to slow them down or counter what they were doing. Whether it was throw a bubble screen, throw a screen, max protect, nothing that you could do. You couldn't do any coaching to adjust to it either. See, that's the part that got left out for, you know, Dirk's, well, the most honest guy. Well, if we're being honest, then why couldn't you guys coach any better to slow it or counter it? How about that aspect of it? If you know a guy's getting beat on a regular basis, then either put somebody over, put Stocker or somebody over to double with Jake, or call a different play that gets rid of the ball quicker. Oh, God. Let's hear one more. Here's Raheem Morris talking about what he saw on film that was good.
I told the guys today, we went into this thing, we're talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we talked about the hitting. And I thought we absolutely were the more physical football team in the beginning of that game, in a good part of that game. We were the more physical team. You had some great physical knockback by the defense when you're talking about the running back knocking them back and the quarterback. He had some really physical plays with Julio catching the drift over the middle of the field and lowering his shoulder on the safety and looking like an absolute beast. We had a couple of really good physical runs early that we were not able to maintain, that we have to be able to maintain throughout the whole game in order to finish teams off the way we want to finish teams off. We got to figure out that, figure out how to do that better.
How can you be the more physical team when your quarterback got hit 11 times yesterday? 11 times. the quarterback got hit, and was sacked 8 times. How are you the more physical football team? Because Julio dropped a shoulder? You're a more physical football team when your quarterback gets sacked 8 times in a game. They'd only given up 14 sacks for the year up to that point, and he's gets sacked 8 times in one game. How are you the more physical football team? Because your wide receiver, who does that to everybody, he can run through guys when he wants to. That's because you're the more physical football team? Not because your O-line got whipped and you gave up 8 sacks? They recorded 3 sacks and still were minus 5 compared to the Saints in that department. Jiminy Christmas. Oh, man. It's hard, man. It really is hard at times to just listen to this stuff and just wonder what these guys are thinking when they go through all this. All right. I can't wait to hear Dirk Cutter later on tonight. That'll really get me fired up. All right. When we get back, JT Daniels shined. And, yes, Kirby did handle it right. I'll explain what that means coming up next. Chuck Reichel, hanging out with you here on an early Tuesday morning. Sports Radio 910 The Game on the radio.com app.
Stockbridge, Southside, what's up?
Check it out.
Mike Bell here from Dukes and Bell. Get the guys' perspective, and the ladies can listen too. It's Guy Talk. We do it each weekday on Dukes and Bell at 3:40 and 5:40. Don't miss it.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back at it on the John Chuckery Show. Early Tuesday morning. Don't forget, it's our first of 2 on Tuesday that we do. Back with you here at regular time at 7 o'clock. Coming up a little bit later on, 404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Radio.com app is how you catch us on the go. Social media is at 929TheGame. Follow me at JMCH316 on the Twitter machine. Bulldogs, Georgia Bulldogs hung on to win 31-24. Over Mississippi State in the debut of JT Daniels, who, let's face it, was terrific in that game. 400 yards and 4 touchdowns for JT Daniels en route to being the SEC Offensive Player of the Week. In a game where the Bulldogs only ran for 8 yards, if you can imagine that. 8 yards is all the Georgia Bulldogs could muster up there. And now people are starting to question about the idea, well, because the quarterback play has obviously been such a mediocre effort at best this year. You know, DeJuan Mathis getting a start. And I said before that start, I just did not think DeJuan Mathis was ready to start right away like that. He hadn't played a game in a couple of years. He hadn't taken contact in a couple of years. I didn't think it was fair, you know, for him to start. But they tried him out there. He gets pulled at halftime. Stetson Bennett leads them back. They win. And then, you know, people were hoping Stetson Bennett would be something. And then you just saw how bad it would get at times out there. Especially, you know, I guess, the Florida game, maybe kind of the low point. In comes JT Daniels. Of course, the transfer from Southern California. Got his waiver coming off of injury from last year. And I just think it's funny that people are questioning the idea. Well, if JT Daniels can do this, why was he not playing? Because he's been hurt, right? See, people confused the he's cleared to play with, okay, he's ready to run out there and get started. Now, even JT Daniels' dad said Kirby has handled this right. Even he said, yeah, he was cleared to play, but that doesn't mean that he was ready to play. And there is a difference about taking live hits out there. And that was my problem with DeJuan Mathis, is that not that I don't like the kid or don't think he can develop into a good quarterback. It's just you're asking a kid to go out there and open the season who hadn't taken a live hit and a live rep in years. Not 1 year, multiple years. Because he had very serious, you know, injury, you know, and health issue that he had to overcome. And so he trots out there, struggles. You could see, you could watch and see that he was struggling to get things done and had to be pulled. And I'm not knocking DeJuan Mathis for it. I don't think he was put in a good position to succeed for all of it. But to question the idea that Kirby Smart intentionally held back JT Daniels, knowing what's at stake, knowing what's on the line, knowing what they want to accomplish, what about Kirby Smart says he would hold JT Daniels back if he could truly play and was ready to play? Now, I do think that in some ways you could make the case that having that extra week, the way that it worked with, you know, the Missouri game being canceled, you know, I'm not sure JT Daniels would have started last week either. By all accounts, from what I've heard, is that, you know, he still was trying to get himself up to game speed. But I think it's unfair for people to sit there and critique Kirby about the idea of, well, why was he holding JT Daniels back? We knew all along. If the guy's not ready, it doesn't make sense to put him in there. And all Kirby had to do was go back to week one and say, man, I put a kid in there that was not ready to start and play. And fortunately, we were playing a bad enough team at that time that, listen, Arkansas is a better team now than they were to start the season. There's no doubt about that. But we were playing a bad enough team that we could overcome that with our talent, and we knew our defense was, you know, going to be lights out, and they were. I mean, they, you know, Arkansas got nothing done and weren't going to get anything, you know, done out of all of it. So that's not a fair criticism of Kirby, is the fact that he held on to JT Daniels like he was waiting to break JT Daniels out, you know, in case of emergency, break glass or something. Or I don't understand that. If the kid wasn't physically ready to handle the workload, then and physically ready to get out there and take live hits and things like that, then why would you rush him? Because, you know, they get JT Daniels for another year. It's not like JT Daniels is, you know, it wasn't like with Jamie Newman where, okay, this is it, and then he's moving on. Get JT Daniels for one more year next year. So why do anything that would risk setting him back when you know you've got the ability to have him for one more season? And look, the competition at quarterback will amp up, right? That Brock Vandergrift is coming in, and you still got Bennett, and there's Carson Beck, I guess. I don't even know if he's in the mix anymore. Daniels. So, you know, you can have your quarterback competition, assuming we get back to spring practice and we get back to a more normalized environment in the college athletic world. But still, I just found it fascinating that people were wanting to get on Kirby about the idea of, well, why wasn't Daniels playing before? Because he wasn't healthy enough and ready enough to do it. Saying that he's cleared to make contact doesn't mean he's clear to just trot him out there week one and let him get his brains beat in. And like I said, Daniel's own father agreed with that. JT Daniel's own dad said, yeah, this was the right way to do it. That he handled everything the right way. It's just unfortunate for Georgia that they didn't have a short-term answer. You know, that they didn't have a guy who could fill in the gap for a few weeks to get Daniels ready. And look, one thing that is clear, and this was brought up a couple weeks ago when we were having a discussion, you can't win big time in college football with a game manager quarterback. I think those days are over of having a guy as a game manager win in the world of college football, win at a high level. Let me put it this way. I'm not talking about being 8-4. I'm talking about you want to be, you know, 11-1, 12-1, you know, 12-0. You got to have a guy who can make a lot of plays at the quarterback position. You can't have a guy who's just a game manager anymore at that spot. You have to have a guy that can win you football games. Look at Miami. You know, what's the difference about Miami? difference about Miami this year and why they've been successful is they have a quarterback in De'Ara King who can win games, who can go out and, whether it's his arm or his legs, make plays and win you games. That's the difference in Miami. That's the difference in what their success is. Yeah, they brought in a new OC and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I understand. You know, they run more spread offense and all that. And they brought in, the OC for SMU. I get all that. But still, you have to have that playmaker. And they have that signal guy. You know, they have that guy under, you know, that signal caller, that guy under center now that can get things done. And hopefully JT Daniels can be that guy. This season is what it is. We were talking on our college football show on Saturday because I was going through and I'd looked at several bowl projections. A lot of people right now have Georgia in the Peach Bowl here against Cincinnati, which I would love. I would love to see that matchup. And I know people are going to dismiss Cincinnati. They're no good and they're a small school and all this kind of stuff. I understand that. They had to come from behind. They found a way to dig in, come from behind, found a way to beat Central Florida on Saturday. And they were, you know, fighting that game the whole way. I'd love to see that matchup. You know, I'd love to see Cincinnati come down here and play, in the Peach Bowl for all of it. So, look, there's still a nice bowl game in Georgia's future. Is it the one that they want to be in? No, because they're not going to be one of the four playoff teams. And don't forget, later on tonight, we're going to get our first college football playoff poll. So we'll have that, right at the start of the show. We'll be able to let you know where everybody stands. I think it's going to be, you know, we know the four. We know it's going to be Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson. That's your top four. I think A&M is going to be five with Florida six. I think that's what you're going to see is A&M 5, Florida 6, as A&M beat them head-to-head. So I think it'll be A&M 5, Florida 6, Cincinnati 7. Cincinnati's not going to get a shot to be in the playoff, but I'd love to see Georgia and Cincinnati hook up here in Atlanta in the Peach Bowl. I think that's a good, you know, New Year's Day type of game to have. I'd be all for that. But look, to think that Kirby was holding back on quarterback, you know, that you can't do that. I mean, there would be no reason for Kirby to want to do something like that. No one, you know, when you've got Alabama and Auburn and Florida and, you know, everybody on your schedule, you know, you're not going to do that. You're not sacrificing games because you're in a pandemic or you don't think you can get it done this year. No, you know, Georgia absolutely came into the season. Look, they were a top four team. They were a preseason playoff team. So people obviously had faith and trust in the idea that, or at least let me put it this way, faith in the idea that Georgia was one of the four best teams in the country. Well, didn't materialize that way. You know, the two best offenses that they ran up against, you know, had their way against Georgia. And, you know, it is what it is from there. But JT Daniels wasn't. There wasn't a conspiracy theory about holding him back for a certain moment if the kid wasn't healthy and ready. Because what would be the – why would Kirby Smart, who is trying to win a national championship, trying to win the SEC, trying to win the SEC East, why would he hold back JT Daniels if he was ready to go? Because he didn't know the playbook or something like that? I got news for you. If he was healthy enough to really go out there and play – and they felt like that he could go out there and do it, he would have played. And see, unfortunately, this is always going to revert back to why did Justin Fields not play? That especially like the LSU game a couple of years ago when he didn't get in the LSU game and they lost that game. Well, why didn't you bring in Justin Fields to change up the pace or whatever like that? It's always going to go back to that discussion. That's the thing. And Kirby will never live that down because of how good Justin Fields has become. Although, he had a whopper of a game on Saturday. What did he throw? He threw as many picks on Saturday as he had if he threw for an entire year last year. Had three interceptions. I think two in the first half against the Cincinnati. Got Cincinnati on the brain. Two against Indiana in that game. In a game where they had to hang on for dear life. And
and just about lost. Indiana's a good football team. That's a good, speaking of well-coached football teams, you know, Tom Allen's done a great job over there. And he was on Hugh Freeze's staff at Old Miss, if you don't know who Tom Allen is. So don't let the conspiracy theories about JT Daniels run your life. If he was fully ready to go, you know, I think from a physical and mental standpoint, Kirby would have put him in, especially given their struggles at quarterback. It's pretty obvious they've struggled all year long at that position. All right, we get back. Survivor Series was last night, and also, too, man, I finished up watching that Steve Austin Broken Skull session. Lots of thoughts about all of that. We'll talk about it next. Chuck Richo, hanging out here. Sports Radio, Nighttime of the Game on the Radio.com app.
Nights with John.
We should be so lucky.
It's the John Chuckery Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio, Nights on the Game. Back with you on the John Chuckery Show. Top of the hour, Amy Lawrence coming up. 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Radio.com app is how you catch us on the go. Social media at 929 The Game. Hit me up at JMCH316. Well, Sunday night, Survivor Series 2020, the final big, you know, of the four tentpole pay-per-views at the big that the WWE does, Survivor Series being one of those. And what was a pretty good show? I mean, obviously going into this thing, the big thing was going to be the farewell of The Undertaker. He was going to do a farewell after 30 years. Remember, he debuted at Survivor Series 1990, which, by the way, that's a fun show. If you go back and watch Survivor Series 1990, that is old school WWF, you know, the Hulkamaniacs versus the Natural Disasters, the Million Dollar Team, the Vipers. I mean, just the traditional Survivor Series matches, you know, 5-on-5 matches, and then they had the final match at the very end of the remaining survivors, and they had one last match, which in 1990 was it was Rick Martel and his group. I forget what they were called, but Rick Martel's team, all his guys survived, and then it was Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, and was it Tito Santana was the other one or something like that? I think there was only three guys that were on it, but it was Hulk and Ultimate Warrior. So of course they won. Of course they eliminated everybody. But Undertaker made his debut in 1990 at Survivor Series, and then closed out his career. And he had, you know, obviously WrestleMania was the final match. If you didn't see the Last Ride documentary, it's worth watching Last Ride. It's fun. I mean, it's five episodes. It's really good stuff. It's a look at The Undertaker like we probably will never see again for all of it. I thought that part of it was all right. I got to be honest with you. When they introduced all the legends, they had all kinds of legends come out first to honor him. That was awesome. I thought it was – that got me going. I thought Austin would be there. I thought they'd have two guys that I thought might be there. Now, Bret Hart, I think, recently had a stroke again or something. I thought he had some kind of health issue or something that maybe he couldn't be there. I don't know. Would have been nice to have Bret Hart there, because they you know, in that mid 90s, you know, they had their feuds and stuff like that. They would go back and forth. SummerSlam 97 is a great match with Bret Hart and The Undertaker, with Shawn Michaels as the referee. That's a terrific match with those two, because they had Mick Foley come out, Shawn Michaels came out, Big Show, Booker T, Ric Flair, the Godwins, Triple H. That whole thing was a lot of fun watching the vets. And it reminds you about, you know, why, you know, you kind of love wrestling. You know, they don't have enough stars. And, you know, that's a Vince thing, that they don't have enough stars, you know, out there nowadays. But that part was really fun. And then The Undertaker came out and did his thing. I mean, it was fine. There wasn't anything earth-shattering. He came out, the long, slow walk. Quick little promo, and that was it. And they had a quick clip of Paul Bearer, and that was it. I mean, it was fine. I thought the introduction of the legends before that was even better. That was cooler. As far as the show goes, matches were pretty good. I mean, I thought the Asuka and Sasha Banks, I mean, they always put on a good match. One thing about the women's division, though, is they got to find some more main event level talent. There's no reason why that Shayna Baszler should not be the number one heel in the women's division right now. She should be booked as the number one heel, not part of a tag team. She should be booked right now as the number one heel. But they have to find more top-level women because they can't just keep running out Asuka, Bayley, and Sasha. Because that's the only three that they have. With Becky Lynch pregnant, with Charlotte going to be out for a while, they don't have enough main event level talent. You know, obviously, what's her name? Ronda Rousey left and all that. They don't have enough main event level talent. You know, they have girls that they want to push and things like that. But right now, Sasha, Bayley, and Asuka, that's your only three that they have. And it's getting kind of old with them just continuing to wrestle with no real reason why they're wrestling other than they're just wrestling and they got the belts. Now, Survivor Series is a little bit different because it's supposed to be champion on champion. So I get that. But just they don't have enough top-level women right now that need to get in and work a program with Asuka or Sasha or Bayley. Because you can see that those three are the best that they have right now. They've got some other good performers. I like Lacey Evans. I think she could be much better if they would, you know, start to push her. But they've got to find some women stuff. The women's Survivor Series match, I didn't like the ending. I didn't like the way it was booked. I thought it was kind of hokey. And I won't give away the ending on it, but I didn't like the way that it was booked. I just thought it was kind of hokey, and that whole storyline that they've been running with that group with Lana and all that, just to me, has been just kind of not really all that intriguing. The men's match, I mean, when it ends up the way that it does, it was, you know, complete lopsided win for Raw. I think it was 5-0. It was 5-0. It was okay. I unfortunately, you look at a lot of those guys out there, and there's not a lot of star power with those guys. There's not a lot of star power in that match. And you had, you had 5-on-5, or, was it 5-on-5? Yeah, let's see. Yeah, 5-on-5. Not a lot of star power in that group. I hate to say it that way, but there's just not a lot of stars between SmackDown and Raw in that group of men. Without a doubt, the highlight of the show, though, was the men's, championship match, the champion versus champion at the end, Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre. And there is no question about the fact that right now, Roman, Drew, and Randy Orton are so far above everybody else on the roster. It is night and day. That match was fantastic. I really enjoyed that match. I thought it was great. Both of those guys are really, along with Randy Orton, that's the three top guys in the company right now. And it's not even close. I mean, in all honesty, nobody else that they have on the roster looks or acts or can do what those guys are right now. So that match was fantastic between those two. I thought the ending was good. I thought the ending was done the right way, that both guys get over in it. Nobody comes off as weak or anything like that. Both guys get over. But it's hard to find, because they're on two different brands, it's hard to find guys to want to wrestle those guys that are in their league. I mean, outside of Randy Orton, there's just nobody at that level of those guys. Those guys, that was an absolute main event type of wrestling match. When you're talking about find me a main event wrestling match, that was absolutely it. So, wasn't a bad show. I thought the last match was tremendous. I did like all the guys coming out for the intro to Undertaker. That was fine. The show definitely, with the last two things that went on, ended on a high note. But I finished watching up today. They have on the WWE Network, Steve Austin has that Broken Skull Session show that he does where he interviews guys. And he had The Undertaker on for what he called One More Round. Now, the very first one of these Broken Skull Sessions on WWE Network that he did, he had The Undertaker on
that one. And this was kind of one of the first times that we saw Undertaker just kind of as Mark Calloway, not as the Undertaker. And this was before WrestleMania. This was before WrestleMania that this took place and this happened. And it went over really well. It was a really good show. And he's done, you know, he's had Bret Hart, he's had Big Show, he's had Kane, he's had Kurt Angle, Ric Flair. They're really good. I will say that Steve Austin has really kind of found a niche as far as interviewing these guys and doing a good job. But they had on afterward, and I didn't watch it last night, I watched it today, but they had on that Broken Skull session with The Undertaker for one more round. And it is fantastic. If you're a fan of old school WWF, Attitude Era, and you love The Undertaker or Austin, those two guys is kind of going through some of his highlights and telling stories and just some of the pictures and just the reminders and the video clips. I think Austin has really hit his stride. Like, he really does a good job of just talking with those guys and having a conversation and just swapping stories. It just, man, it's so good. If you get a chance to watch on the WWE Network, Broken Skull Sessions, one more round with Austin. And listen, they're on set drinking. They're doing shots of Jack Daniels. They're drinking Austin's IPA beer. Hell, Undertaker's got a wine. He's got a Cabernet out there right now. There's an Undertaker wine that he was joking about. Look, you know, I'm looking for my post-life or post-wrestling life, you know, income source and things like that. So that to me was fantastic. It's 2 hours long, 2 hours straight. I mean, so it's just two straight hours of those two guys going through The Undertaker's career. Not so much his backstory, because they did that on the first one, but just really some of the highlights from the first Hell in a Cell, the Hell in a Cell with Mick, his WrestleMania. I mean, just the stuff that they get into, just a very interesting look at the Undertaker character and the man behind all that. So that was really well done. So the Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns match and that Broken Skull Sessions, man, that was two real highlights. So good for the WWF for at least getting those couple of things right. All right, we get back. Love TKO. Going to wrap things up. Amy Lawrence up next. Chuck with Show, Sports Radio 910 The Game on the radio.com app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey, Fairburn.
What's happening?
It's Andy Bunker here from the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. Thanks for listening to us every weekday from 10 to 2 on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Goodness. Wrapping things up here on the John Chuckwish Show. Amy Lawrence coming up. First of two. Back with you later on this evening. Before we get to anything else, though, you know what we have to do. Listen to the greatest opening lyric in all of music history.
Looking back over my years, I guess I shed some tears.
We'll take a little bit deeper look at the Hawks and these roster moves that they've been making. You know, good for them for getting this thing going. And like I said, you know, 4 weeks from today is the start of the NBA season. So crazy to think about how quickly all of this is coming along and how quickly that we're getting to that. So, yeah, not much downtime. And, look, it's a roster now that has to start winning. Shortened season, you know, you're going to have to figure out some things kind of quickly on the fly, because guys are not going to get a lot of chance to play together. You're not going to have summer camps, and you're not going to have long training camps and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, summer league and all this kind of stuff. You know, you got to get it cranked up and going. And you know, the Hawks, and don't forget, you got 10 less games too. So, you know, you can't get out to one of those, you know, 9-24 starts or something crazy. You know what I mean? Like, just can't do it. You know, you got to try to figure out some wins, you know, early in the year, and you got to try to get this team together quicker rather than later. So we're getting a little bit more of that coming up later on this evening. All right, we got to get out of here. Amy Lawrence is coming up now. So used to saying JR Sports Brief. Amy Lawrence coming up for your listening pleasure. Then the morning show will be after that. We'll catch you a little bit later this evening. For Dylan, it's Chuckery. We'll see you. Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.